AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 255 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return a little bit late to discuss the Italian Grand Prix, obviously from the Autodromo Nazionale di Monza. From the weekend, it was a pretty good one. Early on in the race, I think it's safe to say. First of all, I'd like to apologise that this episode is coming out a little bit later than what you're used to. But of course, the other thing you guys are used to are inconsistent podcasts, and normally it's because Jamie's been away. Jamie, did you have a good time at the Italian GP?
I did. I had a very good time. The weather was banging, obviously.
Yep.
We had a really good spot to watch a lot of stuff happen. We're right on the back of the main straight, so you've got the exit Parabolica. You couldn't quite see turn one because we're quite low down, but we've got the podium scenes, and yeah, we got to like see all the craziness that Italians get up to on the end of the race with the massive flag on the pit straight and stuff like that. Like, standing on our benches, we were basically in our grandstand, the second back row, so when we were stood on our bench, we had a great view of the podium and everything, so it was really cool. Sadly, the race was not the best, and we literally saw the shortest race of all time. but it was a, you know, for me as a Max fan, couldn't celebrate it because he'd got murdered very quickly, but it was good fun.
Good. Well, I'm happy you had a good time, as always. I mean, yeah, it did make me chuckle, the fact Stefano Domenicali this last week, it literally came out saying, Formula One races need to be shorter. And then we literally get the fastest Formula One race of all time.
Yes.
Which is pretty good going. Like we said, it was quite a historic weekend. Obviously, it was quite an important weekend. It was quite an interesting weekend, but kind of not so much on track. So we're not going to kind of do this like a normal episode again, where it's a little bit later on in the week. We're not going to go back through every single thing that happened. We're kind of going to talk about like the main points. As always, timestamps will be linked down in the description below if you just want to head to a certain part of the video. But I mean, Friday practice, or even practice on Saturday, wasn't it, Jamie? It looked like Ferrari were cooking. They'd saved this Monza engine. It was going to be glorious. It was going to be a front row lockout. And Ferrari were going to sail off into the sunset. I might have forgot when I did my prediction last week that Lewis had a five-place grid.
Have a five-place grid. I did think
that.
Yeah,
I might have forgot about that. you didn't tell me at the time.
No, I didn't. I'd forgot at the time. But then when I remembered later in the week.
I'm going to change that one before we do the prediction recap.
Yeah, the end of FP1 was the most obvious glory run in the world. They literally went in the pits, put soft tyres on, took all the fuel out, and then went 1-2 in FP1.
We love it. Like, Ferrari have to do that, though, at Monza. Come on.
A little bit, yeah. But it just gets all the fans excited, which is, I guess, the point of F1. But it was clearly not real pace, and it seemed like a lot of people, especially by Saturday, knew that the Ferrari is probably the third or even the fourth quickest. The other car that was maybe third or fourth quickest, Mercedes, only had one car complete any of FP2 because 10 minutes in for the second year in a row to a practice session at Monza, Antonelli just binned it by himself, and it was so needless that it actually happened right in front of us, which was quite cool. But yeah, it was just needless to just put it in the gravel at Lesmo 2. Out 10 minutes into FP2, no race runs, and then, you know, he can, he'll then have no pace in the race, which is exactly what happened. And, well, you wonder why, because he did no race runs in FP2.
Yeah, and you obviously combine that with, obviously, George Russell's mechanical failure in FP1, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't a good start to the weekend for Mercedes either. On a circuit that, especially where it's so warm, I don't think it was ever really going to suit them that well anyway. Moving on, though, into qualifying, Jamie, very, very quickly, it looked like the battle was probably going to be McLaren, Verstappen, maybe if Ferrari did a bit of a banzai run, they could kind of stay in that fight. I was a little bit surprised, to be honest, right at the end of Q3, that they didn't just give Hamilton to give Charles a ridiculous slipstream in towards turn one or something like that,
yeah.
just to try and see how high they could get one car on the grid.
Yeah, it was a strange one because obviously Hamilton is carrying that grid penalty. They should maybe, especially as his banker was pretty good, Hamilton, so he wasn't going to be lower than sixth, really, sixth or seventh, wasn't he? And the highest he was going to be was fifth, basically. So you think just sacrifice him. Not literally.
Yeah, whether Charles just didn't want it, whether he was, I just can't, kind of, you know, with that, it won't help me enough around the rest of the lap. I'm worried I'll make a mistake elsewhere or something like that.
I wonder. It wasn't incredibly tight anyway, because I think the top four were separated by a tenth and a half, or 0.2, was it? It was very, very little.
Yeah, by the end of the session, it was very close. And I mean, here's a fun fact for you, Jamie. Of course, you know, Monza has been reprofiled in the last couple of years. It has made it a much, not a much quicker venue, but it's definitely now quicker, of course. Obviously, Ascari has been completely reprofiled, so obviously you can attack a lot more through there. The second chicane, I feel like, has been altered around slightly as well. Just obviously try and make it a little bit easier. It's basically obviously to try and help not get as much gravel back onto the circuit, which you then think on the exit of Lesmo 2, they've done the exact opposite. It's a little bit weird, but it was looking like, of course, especially after what we saw at Belgium a few weeks ago, where obviously the lap record, you know, everybody thought that W10 Mercedes was just going to be impossible to beat. It happened at Spa, it happened again here, but fun fact, Lando Norris now holds the record for the shortest time holding
a lap record.
The F1 top speed lap record, the average speed lap record.
Was it 4 seconds? 4 or 5 seconds?
Slightly more than that, but not much.
He went on pole, didn't he, with a lap record, and then Max beat him by coming across later. So that is a fun fact. You mentioned the gravel at Lesmo 2. We were sat there for FP2, and whenever someone went, like, put a wheel into gravel, obviously it would bring a bit onto the track. And then the next cars to go over on a flying lap would obviously run over the gravel, and the gravel would just go flying. So you were getting absolutely torpedoed by gravel if you were sat in the grandstand. So we were just like getting absolutely pummeled by these little bits of stones.
It's a bit of an odd choice, isn't it? I think, especially around such a high speed circuit like that. I mean, I don't know if you watched it, but Ugo Chukwu in F3, someone brought up gravel through Ascari the lap before. And you watched it from the car behind him on board. He did nothing wrong, and just the back end completely broke out on him.
It's like marbles, isn't it? It's like marbles on the racing line, effectively.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird. Like, it's that horrible balance still of, you kind of think, does grass do the trick in a lot of places, especially on a dry weekend? Would grass do the trick instead?
It just doesn't slow the cars down. You maybe want a strip of grass on the very exit, and then gravel, then a gravel trap. Because if someone, I don't know, like, had a brake failure, for instance, going into Lesmo 2, I know it's not the fastest corner in the world, but if it was just grass, they would basically always be hitting the barriers there. Whereas gravel stops a car before it hits the barrier.
I guess you could have, say, 15 feet of grass, and then gravel all the way out.
Possibly.
It is just that thing, isn't it, of, you know, we've kind of seen this whole, it feels like we kind of, obviously, I don't know, obviously different circuits are different with this still, but we kind of went through this whole era of everything had to be tarmac runoff.
Yeah.
And then no one was ever punished for making mistakes. And obviously then it's like, oh, well, gravel might fix it all, or sausage curbs might still fix it all. And kind of, you know, the best circuits for minimizing mistakes are, you know, tracks like Suzuka, where you're either fine or you're in the grass, which
or
works
Monaco.
Quite well.
You're or fine Monaco, or you're in the barrier.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, great lap from Max, lap record holder for the fastest lap in F1. I don't think it was, maybe it was the fastest in qualifying. It definitely was the fastest in the race, but still did a very good job to get ahead of the McLarens. Yeah, I was very happy.
No, I mean, those Red Bull again, obviously, we've seen him use it a couple of times before, haven't we? But it's a really, really interesting rear wing design that they use. To obviously try and maximise the downforce around a circuit like Monza. I think we first saw it, I want to say, at either Monza or Vegas a few years ago, where obviously they've basically got those two cutouts on the rear wing, haven't they?
Yeah. It's incredibly low drag, very efficient in a straight line.
Yeah, exactly. But what I found even more fascinating, I can't remember where I was reading it, But there was an article talking about that, obviously, after, because Verstappen didn't use it on Friday, that apparently he'd spoken to Pierre Vacher, obviously basically going, you know, I want to try the, you know, uber low downforce wing. And Vacher was apparently like, oh, no, I just don't think it's going to work. And Laurent Mekies apparently went, because obviously he's got an engineering background, he was like, give it a whirl, see what happens. As long as obviously you don't write the car off in like FP3 before qualifying, which, to be fair to Verstappen, you trust him a lot more to not write the car off than the other car would. But yeah, obviously coming from that engineering background, he was kind of there like, give it a try, why not? And, you know, Red Bull now, I mean, throughout free practice, I don't think anybody was going to say they were in the fight. And then suddenly they were. And obviously Tsunoda didn't use this rear wing. And, you know, obviously, again, it's Max Verstappen versus his teammate in that Red Bull team. He's pretty much always got a decent advantage. But Verstappen won, and Yuki Tsunoda was near enough lapped.
Yes. In fact, he was so near enough lapped that most people in the crowd...
You could see him in the shot, couldn't you,
when filming
Verstappen was
Tsunoda when he came across the line. And some of the Red Bull people on the wall cheered Tsunoda as he came across the line, thinking it was Verstappen. But never mind. I mean, Tsunoda did quite a good job in quali, to be fair. He got Q3, qualified 7th, 8th.
He was unlucky in the race. They pit him far too early.
But he was unlucky, but also he had no pace. Like, if you pit Max early, he passes the Gaslys and Bordoletto, not Bordoletto, Colapintos of the world, doesn't he? Like, Tsunoda...
You'd hope so, but Monza's a weird little track, though, isn't it? It's the kind of thing where you go, he probably would, but then if he sat behind him for 30 laps, he'd be there going... Anywhere else he wouldn't, but Monza's just strange.
Well, Hamilton started
behind
him. Because
the DRS is so ineffective. Yeah, but Hamilton got past them all almost immediately.
That's what I mean.
And then made no more progress.
That's what I mean, because Hamilton was able to pass those midfielders. Tsunoda just got behind them and stayed there. And then crashed with one of them. So, yeah. I don't know. It's slightly unlucky, but also his pace was not there in the race at all.
No, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, obviously, the start of the Grand Prix, though, let's be fair, Jamie, like we said, the first two laps were, like, the first five laps were great. My mum texted me yesterday, or rang me yesterday, and we talked about just about this, that, and the other. She went, did you watch the race? And I was like, well, yes, obviously. I was like, did you? She went, well, I watched the first, like, five laps, and then I had to do other stuff. I went, well, you basically saw all the good stuff then, to be honest.
My mum texted me and was like, I fell asleep halfway through the race, which is fair enough. if I was sat at home, I might have done the same thing. But yeah, I mean, the first two laps were really good, though. So let's talk about the positives.
We had Nico Hülkenberg out before the race even started, as our resident Nico Hülkenberg fan, Jamie, how did that make you feel?
Well, I actually didn't know until about lap two, to be honest. I took a photo of Max and Norris on the way to the grid on doing their burnouts because we were just after the pit lane entry, so you couldn't actually see who pitted until they were in the pit lane where you got a reflection off the building kind of thing. I look down to look at this photo of Max, look up to try and get one of Hulk, and I'm like, oh, he must have gone past me. I didn't see him. That's weird. And then by the end of lap one, this commentator in the like doing the commentary in the paddock or in the racetrack just says, and Nico Hülkenberg has retired. I'm like, oh, is he? Great. To be fair, he wasn't going to beat Bortoletto, so it just saves some face on that.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Sauber again had looked very, very quick here, especially obviously Bortoletto. But yeah, hydraulic failure on the run to the grid was
impressive.
Not the way Nico Hülkenberg would have wanted this weekend to go. On a circuit that he did almost get a podium at many years ago, hey, Jamie?
In 2013, which one?
I think it was it 2013 he came
he
fourth?
Came, he qualified third in the Sauber. And then finished fifth in that year.
Fair enough. Okay.
He finished fifth at Renault as well in 19. So he does do quite well here.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a track that's just all straight lines. Of course he does well.
I guess
We had a bit more controversy, though, didn't we? Obviously, the rundown in towards Turn 1. Lando Norris and Max Verstappen, of course. It was, as a more neutral fan between these two, to be honest, I'd rather... I mean, I'm in all McLaren get-up this morning. I want to make it very clear to all of our viewers that Jamie and I are not biased on this podcast. We represent everyone equally, as long as they are Max Verstappen or Nico Hülkenberg for Jamie and Lewis Hamilton for me. So, apart from those, we're completely unbiased. But it was good to see Lando kind of not immediately just back out and slot in behind Max. Obviously, Max tried to push him out into the grass on the running towards T1. So Lando just sent it on him for a change.
And you know what? Fair play, Lando.
He needs to do this.
I thought when Max had him on the grass, which to be fair, wasn't that bad because Max closed the space while it was tarmac on the outside. So Lando chose to put his car half on the track, half off the track. And then later on it becomes grass. It's like, he pushed me on the grass. I know he didn't.
It's a horrible one, isn't it, down there? Because yeah. You're kind of there going, you know that space is going to run out, but you're kind of also then there going, the other guy's being a bit of a penis as well.
Kind of. But he managed to send it and actually get it slowed down as well. So Max has to jump the chicane. Obviously was always going to give it back, which he did. He didn't make
I know he didn't want to.
I know he didn't want
he said
to.
He said he shouldn't have to, apparently, because he got, and I quote, he just pushed me off. Like, that's not what Max does every single time.
Well, it is,
time.
Yeah, but, you know, the
it
margins,
just made me laugh so much.
It's why he is a four-time world champion, because he looks for those 1%.
Well, because he cries when someone does the same thing to him as he did to someone else.
Well, he just wants it to go his way every time.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But you kind of, again, you kind of just like, oh, come on, mate, you do that every
yeah,
time.
Yeah, obviously.
And then immediately beyond the radio going, oh, he jumped the chicane.
It was never going to be anything other than he had to let Lando through, was it?
No, so. Exactly. saying Lando did barely get it slowed down inside track limits, though. I think, to be honest, he was prepared to run wide if he needed to.
Well, if Lando went off the track.
To try and make his point. Yeah, exactly. If Lando went off the track, Max would have kept it.
Yeah.
So I think that's why Lando, at the very last moment, probably
Abu
cost
Dhabi,
himself time.
Abu Dhabi lap one in 2021, when Lewis should have given the place back to Max.
Oh, but what? He was already halfway through the corner.
Yeah, he jumped the chicane. Max kept it on track.
But Lewis was already halfway through the corner and had to avoid Max completely.
Max stayed on the track. There you go. Same difference. The rules have changed since then.
Yeah, I was going to say, the rules have definitely changed since then. But again, it's why the rules are so dumb in the first place, that you could just barrel someone off.
Yeah.
As long as you keep it barely inside the circuit, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll get onto that when we talk about another incident later in the race as well. The rest of lap one, how on earth did Oscar Piastri go down the outside of Charles Leclerc at Les Mo 1?
Genuinely might be overtake of the year. Crazy. When he tried that, I just had visions of Charles getting a snap of oversteer and spearing them both off. Incredible by Oscar Piastri.
Like the signs in Grosjean crash at Copse in 1 year.
Yes, yeah.
They would have been exactly the same thing as that. Charles loses a bit of downforce on the inside and it's race over for the pair of them. And that would have been quite funny, but also really bad for Piastri's championship. But the first few laps, he was being so punchy. And, you know, when you're championship leader by 38 points, I was a little bit surprised by that. 34 points, sorry. It would have been... No, it would never have been 38, would it? Never mind. yeah, it was a very aggressive start. And that Ferrari was genuinely so fast on the straights, but had absolutely nothing in the corners.
So right, McLaren, it's just the Ferrari Monza strat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Try and make the car as quick as possible on Saturday.
Just be a nuisance.
Which they still didn't manage. And then pray on Sunday.
Literally. And then, yeah, the McLaren with DRS for a couple of laps when it got activated was still not as fast as the Ferrari. Or nowhere near close enough to make an overtake. But eventually, he got it done and was up into P3. And that was the end of the hopes of a Ferrari home podium, which was a shame because I would have quite liked to see that, to be honest.
Well, it was nearly an opportunity later on in the Grand Prix. But yeah, obviously, Max would let Lando by, and then it wouldn't take long before Max would get back past him again and then just waltz off into the sunset. I don't know whether McLaren thought like the Red Bull was going to shred through its tyres or something as well. But ultimately, on that setup around this track, the Red Bull was just the quickest car.
Quickest driver car combination.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Then don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's a little bit of, you know, a little bit of Max magic as well of being able to keep that car on the road.
If Snowder and Lawson were driving it, they would have come 15th and 16th, so...
I'd be interested to see what they could have done with that rear wing, to be fair. Whether they would have binned it or whether they would have been okay. just out of pure fascination, to be honest, as much as anything else. We'll get a few other bits and pieces, though, wouldn't we, Jamie? Obviously, Fernando Alonso, suspension failure after he dragged that Aston Martin way higher than it ever should have been.
According to him, it was probably the best race of his career again.
It must have been the best race of his F1 career,
like
just like, obviously, Zandvoort was last week. I think he said
Monaco
Hungary
was as well.
Some a break. Monaco was. Belgium was. Silverstone must have been. Austria as well.
To say he's done 33% of races of all time.
It's higher than that now, isn't it?
Yeah, probably a lot higher than that. He does have a lot of best races of his career, doesn't
he? Every of those 300 or 400 odd Grand Prix, every single one of them has been the best of his career, which is pretty impressive. He's just getting better and better every week.
He was unlucky.
Apart from a suspension failure.
He was unlucky with that suspension failure. I don't think he ran any wide and he had done any other point, but this time the suspension just decided it was made of spaghetti.
If you keep doing that, then... It was kind of one of those ones where, he's been a bit unlucky that's happened, but it's kind of one of, as well, Aston Martin should be aware of how durable the suspension is. If you tell him, because he did get the car fully over, like, the serrated edge of the curb,
did,
didn't he?
He was on the track.
Drops off on the back. Even though he was still inside track limits, but that's because the curb isn't as wide as the car. Mm.
Yeah, it was a bit like Vettel in Kota 2019, was it? When he just used the curb the same as every other time he'd used it, but this time it decided it was going to fail. So,
and that was also very early on in the Grand Prix.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you just get the car. Do you remember back on F1 2016, heading out onto the Raffles Boulevard at Singapore, you could get the wheel trapped between the curb and the wall.
Yeah.
It's kind of, that kind of vibe.
Winning a league race from last place because someone took everyone out that year. That was good.
Yeah, that race didn't count, though, did it, in the end?
No, we restarted. That was a shame.
I can't remember who won the actual race where we did restart.
I think you won it.
I think I did.
I came third. I didn't ask you why I remember that. There we go. Alonso, though, incredible overtake on Bortoleto in the pit lane. The fact that he closed up about 50 feet on the way into the... by nailing the pit entry. And then the team obviously gave a slightly faster pit stop and it got him ahead of Bortoleto. He was genuinely going to finish best of the rest if he could keep the Sauber behind, apart from Albon.
Aston Martin was
back row in Spa like a month ago.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's Aston Martin just don't have the... They never have done really through this ground effect era, have they? They really do tend to go with a more high downforce concept than everybody else.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. I think they always kind of knew Monza was going to be tough, and I mean, especially when you got Lance Stroll in the car.
Podium finish
that ended
Monza.
Up being the case. Yeah, I know, but not an Aston Martin.
Well, a pink Mercedes, close enough.
Well, exactly. We will get a few other bits and pieces, though. I mean, Sainz and Ollie Bearman, two weekends in a row now, Sainz has been involved in a crash, and I can understand why the rules have given the penalties the way they did. But it feels like on both weekends the penalty went to the wrong car.
Certainly this one, I agree.
I can understand why the rules gave Sainz the penalty last weekend, as we talked about on last week's show. But it still feels like when you actually watch it, the wrong driver gets penalised.
Especially this one in Monza. Even with the stupid rules, this doesn't make much sense. Because it's almost like they've paused it at a still at the apex of turn four and been like, well, Bearman should have... He's not alongside enough.
Backed out.
He should have backed. But Bearman's the one defending. That's the
thing. Sainz hasn't completed the move.
Exactly.
This
so Bearman
is
entitled
utterly
to
bizarre
be there.
Thing. Yeah. But it's... he's not, because he's not ahead of the apex. This ahead of the apex thing is so dumb.
But then
so
it's,
impossibly
it's...
stupid.
I was under the impression ahead of the apex only mattered for the overtaking car, really. Because...
But he is the overtaking car.
But Bearman at that point isn't. Bearman
no, has... Sainz is, though. So because Sainz is ahead of the apex, he gets to dictate the line, which means turning across Bearman and hoping that Bearman just disappears.
Yeah, where's Bearman meant to go? It's very like...
Oh, exactly. It's so stupid.
Singapore 2010, Webber on Hamilton. Well, Hamilton on Webber, wasn't it? Where Hamilton at turn six, the left-hander, the only overtaking point.
At the end of the Raffles Boulevard,
Basically just turned across Webber and expected him to disappear. And you could say, well, he should have backed out. But then he doesn't have to back out. He's entitled to keep his car in. It was dumb from Sainz. He was actually on for a point as well for his... Yeah, and he didn't get it because Hadjar overtook both of them when they spun. But they gave Bearman the penalty and two penalty points. So that takes him up to eight?
Ten for the year.
Ten for the year.
Bearman might genuinely get banned and Magnussen will replace him. They'll do a swap from last year. Magnussen will get his race back.
I do get why he's on so many, because the eight you got for red flag infringements were proper stupid. But getting two for something like that feels incredibly harsh. And, you know, Sainz could have just given a bit more leeway. And, yeah, I don't know. It was very dumb. Not the best look from Sainz or the stewards, to be honest.
I mean, it's that bizarre thing, isn't it, as well? Where, you know, it's not even like Behrman's aggressively tried to keep the car there. No. He's just trying to drive.
Yeah.
It's not like he's trying to lunge back on Sainz or anything like that. He's just there.
Yeah, yeah. And he's very much entitled to be there. And Sainz just turns across him. And Behrman is the one with the penalty. I don't get it at all. No, if anything, it's like play on, because they've both lost out, effectively, haven't they? So,
yeah. I mean, yeah, from my perspective, he's kind of there going, I think, you know, had it been me and without properly reading note 15.5b of the FIA technical regulations, you know, if it was just me looking at it from an arbitrary standpoint, I got a 5-second penalty for Sainz. Something like that.
I either just turned across him. Sainz a 10-second or no further action, because they both lost out. And
exactly.
I don't like outcome-based stewarding, but yeah, I don't know. It felt a bit weird that Behrman gets the penalty in that position.
Yeah. Do you know what else is weird, Jamie?
Go ahead.
I want you to close your eyes for a second.
Okay.
And I'm going to watch this back to make sure you've closed your eyes. Picture this.
Mm-hmm.
Your two drivers in a championship fight.
I wonder where this is going.
It's going to be your two drivers battling for the world championship.
Why do I have to have my eyes closed? Why are my eyes closed?
Because you've got to imagine this. It's a hypothetical scenario for you. Your two drivers, the only ones in the championship fight. You built a dominant car this year. The constructors is basically wrapped up. You could not show up now between now and Qatar, and you'd still be leading, even if Ferrari somehow got wins in that time. Your driver who's got a 34-point lead in the world championship, he's about to get undercut by another driver. So you box him first. You then mess up your pit stop with your other driver when they pit him the next lap. So your driver leading the world championship comes out in front. He's got a bit of an unfair undercut, but you know, slow pit stops is sometimes what happens in Formula One. You then tell them in the heat of championship battle to swap positions back again. Jamie, can you see that scenario ever happening IRL in Formula One?
The thing is, if you tell me that 2 weeks ago, I'm like, obviously not. That's so hypothetical. But it's exactly what happened in Monza.
It's so dumb.
Apart from a minor detail, is Piastri wasn't about to get undercut by Leclerc. They were inventing...
If he'd had Lando stop, he would have been.
Well, yes. But they were... So Leclerc was closing half a second a lap, and they still had 3.5 seconds to play with. So realistically, Leclerc was 6 laps, or 7 laps, or 8 laps from undercutting Piastri. What they really were doing was, obviously, Max pit first, and the McLarens were temporarily 1-2. For a brief time, both McLarens were ahead of Max's safety car window, if you get what I mean. So, safety car comes out, both McLarens could have pit. They would have come out ahead. And they, ironically, that's exactly when Sainz and Behrman crashed. So I was very worried for about 10
seconds. I honestly was like, safety car, come on!
Basically, Max starts closing. Piastri's safety car window was gone. So they pit him because there's not much point in doing anything else. Norris had the option of pitting first, but said, am I still in the safety car window? Can I stay out? And the team said yes, and there will be no undercut, is a quote from Will Joseph. And then obviously Piastri pits first. Within the next lap, Max gets rid of Norris's safety car window, so Norris pits as well. So the thing is, Anthony Davidson did a really good tweet on this, actually, where it sounds like McLaren have got... Was it... No, it wasn't Anthony Davidson. It was Martin Brundle's son, Alex Brundle. They've got a list of things that are just racing and things that are, you know, team procedures and stuff like that. So, for instance...
Fair conduct within the McLaren organisation.
The problem for this was... And basically, pitting the other car first is a team conduct thing. Slow pit stop is just racing. The problem for McLaren in this case is you can't really separate what caused Piastri to be ahead. Because there was probably a bit of undercut, but maybe, you know, 0.8 of a second.
He only came out like a second ahead after Lando lost 4 in the pit lane.
80%, I would say, of the reason that Piastri got ahead was due to the slow pit stop. But maybe 20%, 15% was due to the undercut. So I can see why they swapped the cars from McLaren's perspective, but it's very dumb. And yeah, they were extremely fortunate that they were still second and third, because, you know, had Norris had an 8.9 second pit stop instead of a 5.9, he would have come up behind Leclerc. And then what do you do? You just got to leave it.
Exactly. Yeah. He's all over. Well, this race.
Yeah. So I feel for Piastri. I just feel for Norris as well, because it's made him look bad for no reason at all. But the team is just mismanaging it, as usual. And for a neutral perspective, it's a shame that the championship hasn't livened up, because had Piastri ignored the team order and kept second place, it would have made it extremely entertaining for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But I think he probably did the right thing.
I think for Piastri as well at the moment, to be honest, he feels pretty confident in his own ability to win this championship,
exactly.
Doesn't he? I think he's why he's kind of like, I don't need to rock the boat at the moment. You know, a bit like what we saw with Verstappen and Perez a couple of years ago of, you know, Max had already wrapped up the world championship and wouldn't give Perez a P6 to try and help him out.
With his mentality.
Yeah.
The thing is,
you can kind of look at it from both ways, can't you?
You can.
You can understand it, but you're also there kind of going, it still looked a bit stupid.
Yeah, and the problem was they were trying to tell Piastri that you're only ahead because of an undercut, which wasn't true. He was only ahead because they messed up Norris's pit stop.
Yeah.
It was a shame. Tom Bellingham from another F1 podcast made a good point. You know, what if this is Abu Dhabi, lap 40?
And
you've done exactly the same thing, and then you're basically
for the championship.
It's for the championship. What do you do then? Yeah. You know, surely not. And we're only 8 races away from that. I guess the gap is different. I really wonder, had it been a pre-Zandvoort gap. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the likes of
had it been either
points,
a 15-point gap or a 3-point gap.
Yeah, would they have still expected Piastri to give it over if it was going to change the lead of the championship? I don't know. I did enjoy Max laughing about it, having seen the
stuff that was
on
quite
the,
funny
on the screens.
Yep.
I did also like Max in the media pen afterwards, where the Dutch interviewer was like, just to make sure, would you have done that? He said, nope. And then just moved on.
I mean, this is the same McLaren that back in like the late 80s would absolutely whip the field, and Senna and Prost would crash into each other, that kind of thing. Where's that McLaren gone, man?
Annoyingly, from a corporate management point of view, they're doing it very well. But it's just
that's why they've got a million sponsors on the car. That's why my T-shirt's got a million sponsors on it this morning.
I'm surprised that didn't come off in the wash, like most of the McLaren merch does.
And to be fair, so far it's been all right.
Yeah, it was... I don't know, it was probably... From a McLaren perspective, it was the right thing to do. And in fact, Piastri did still gain out of it, because he went from 3 seconds back to DRS. He just couldn't do anything.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. There's no points or anything for that. And he very quickly, like, the McLaren just couldn't stay in the DRS that easily either.
No. What would have been amazing is if Ferrari was slightly quicker and Leclerc managed to put himself between them. Because
that would have been,
you know,
hilarious.
Do they then go, oh, Oscar, give the place back to Leclerc and Lando? It's like, no, of course they don't do that.
No, exactly.
It just feels, it's just like manipulation for manipulation's sake.
It's teddy bear racing is what I now call it.
Well, yeah, papaya rules. There you go.
Yeah, papaya rules. Teddy bear racing. It's all a bit crazy, isn't it? At this stage,
I did see them celebrating. So I managed to hop the wall. Well,
yeah,
you
did, didn't you?
Sadly, my camera work was horrendous. So
there's no surprise there. I've seen your Instagram posts.
Brilliant. The video I took was of like the three people on the very right hand side, and not the drivers, and not the pit board. Because I was just holding
my phone. McLaren celebrating a double podium.
Exactly, in 2025. Come on.
In big 2025, when that's a pretty bad result for them.
It's the second race all year, and they haven't had the pace to win.
Well, to be fair as well, I think it means they've broken their record for most podiums in a season.
That's probably worth celebrating.
Which is pretty good going. Jamie, do you want your quiz?
Yeah, go on then. I'll do a little quiz.
So, as we know, obviously, Stefano Domenicali, you want shorter F1 races.
He does.
We got the shortest ever F1 race this weekend. Do you know what Grand Prix it beat?
Was it this race last year?
No.
Oh, I thought it was. Was it this race 2 years ago?
No.
Was it Monza?
Yes.
Was it Monza 19? Was there a safety car that year?
No.
What was it? I've no idea.
It was Monza 2003. This bodes well for you. That your quiz should have just been, can you name the old fastest Formula One race? It was Monza 2003, Jamie. Okay. Your quiz today, very simple. You've just got to tell me every driver that was classified. Get one wrong, it's over.
I've predicted I'm going to be out so quickly.
Hopefully.
Okay. 2003, let's take myself back. To when I was 3 years old,
You were 3 years old.
Michael Schumacher.
Correct.
Rubens Barrichello.
Correct.
Juan Pablo Montoya could have blown up, but I'll go for him anyway.
Correct. You've got the podium.
Oh, nice.
Not in the right order, but you did get the podium.
No. Kimi Raikkonen.
Correct. P4.
I'm surprised.
You did
very well. That was risky because the McLaren either won or DNF'd, and if he wasn't on the podium.
No, the McLaren in 2003 was fine.
Oh, I'm thinking 05.
You're thinking of 05. The 2003 McLaren was very consistent, hence why Kimi managed to get into the finale with a shot with one win.
The other BMW, so Montoya drove one. Was it Ralf Schumacher?
Incorrect.
Oh.
Didn't even do this race.
Didn't do it? What?
Nope.
Why?
So, I was actually reading about this earlier on. In 2003, Ralf Schumacher had suffered a testing crash earlier on in the year at Monza. Where was
it? So, had PTSD?
I don't think it was PTSD, necessarily. Where was it? Ralf Schumacher, had crashed during a private test session at Monza. He was cleared by Formula One's race doctor, Sid Watkins, participated in Friday testing and qualifying, but together with his team, the German decided to step back and let third driver Marc Genet stand in ahead of the sessions on Saturday.
Well, I was never going to get Marc Genet, was I? So
you should have got Marc Genet.
Yeah, that is a shame.
4 out of a possible 13, Jamie. You did terribly.
That's... I would have gone next, David Coulthard, obviously.
You would have been wrong. He would have been over as well.
Fisichella?
That was Trulli. That would have been on there. No, you would have been wrong.
Alonso.
Again. Trulli didn't even make the start. Oh. Alonso did. He got 8th.
That would be it. Button, maybe.
Button didn't finish.
It's a disaster.
Yeah, you've had an absolute stinker there, sir, and I love it. Because I had an absolute stinker in our predictions, didn't I?
Did you?
Actually, I don't think I did hilariously badly, but I just didn't do well.
No, you just predicted Hamilton on the podium, despite...
having a grid penalty. Forgot his penalty.
I think you've egged it a little bit, to be honest.
I think I have egged it slightly. No, I haven't egged it. You've egged it. Wait, no, you haven't.
No,
I've egged
you
it.
Have.
I don't know.
Whatever. The scores and the doors.
I think both of us have egged it.
Were 51 to me and 40 to you. 11
51
points.
51 out of a possible... It's been well over 100 points available this year, hasn't it?
Has it?
8 on an average weekend plus an extra 6. So you're looking at 124 points available this year.
Oh, that's actually not very good then, is it?
No, we're terrible at this.
You put Piastri on pole. Incorrect. Piastri win. 1 point.
1 point, I'll take
Norris
that.
Second, 2 points.
2 points! Huzzah! 3 points
and
overall.
Lewis Hamilton third, not ever
so close.
Happen.
So close.
I said Norris on pole, nope. Norris win, nope. But 1 point for that. I put Piastri second, 1 point for that. And Verstappen third. So we both get 3 points.
Yay!
But I feel like my 3 points were more deserved.
Welcome to me most weeks.
So 54 to 43.
I've got to start reining this back in the last
you
few
really
rounds.
You really do.
You've only ever won this once, and I refuse to let you get it. I've won it 3 times? Yeah,
and
20,
I made
20,
you
24.
Tweet that 2021 was fair. That was very funny.
Yeah, and then a couple of people actually took it seriously, which was hilarious.
And a couple of people
were
immediately like, well, this isn't Matt, is it?
Yeah. I mean, Twitter now, there's no point doing that as a forfeit.
No.
I reckon you... got to post a picture of your bare bottom on Instagram or something.
Absolutely not. In the comments, come up with a forfeit that actually makes sense and wouldn't get you arrested. That would be grand.
Would that get you arrested?
Maybe not. It wouldn't be, get you down very well, would it?
I don't know. I don't know about what your following policy.
Definitely not that. Antonelli, Toto Wolff has said he's underwhelming.
What's going on with Toto? Like, he's so upset that Hamilton left still. Like, he's not. He just doesn't want to sign anybody anymore.
No, and to be fair, Anthony has been underwhelming. If you obviously it's all if, but taking that podium away in Canada, he has 3 points since Miami. In a Mercedes.
It's been a tough one though, hasn't it? Because like we said, and I know I'm a bit of an I'm an Antonelli defender on this podcast, and I will stand by that. The field's very close, and the Mercedes car this year, apart from Montreal as well, has been, because again, like these rules were always meant to do, it was meant to bring everybody closer. Mercedes haven't done a particularly great job with it.
No. But you wonder if it wasn't a rookie who's 18 or 19 now. Say they brought in a Sainz or even a Hülkenberg. I know they couldn't get Hulk because he'd already signed, but Sainz was the one, wasn't he? The low-hanging fruit that's right there. I know he's not doing great at Williams, but I struggle to believe if he was at Mercedes, he'd be doing it as badly as Antonelli is.
No, no. But again, it's Mercedes have got to appreciate, you know, and they knew this coming in. He's a long-term investor.
Exactly. And like, he was going to be great in his first year.
Well, Toto Wolff said they will sign both drivers for next year, and Russell's kind of there going, where's my contract, man? Come on, I want to see how many zeros are on the end of it.
It's a very bad negotiation position to just tell your driver they're going to get what they want and then let them drive the wages up, but, you know.
Just a bit stupid, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But let's digress from that and talk about driver of the day, who probably wasn't Kimi Antonelli.
Probably not.
Max Verstappen. For me,
I think he probably deserves to be. Shout out as well, Isaac Hadjar had a very good drive back through the field.
Bortoletto as well,
yeah, fantastic. Alonso, had he not had suspension failure, I think would be a great shout. Piastri for his move on lap one as well was very good, but yeah, I think to argue anybody other than Max would be a bit foolish this weekend.
There was actually more going on than I realised. To be fair, I hadn't seen the...
Yeah, but it's just... It's quintessential of these ground effect regs, isn't it?
I hadn't seen any of the Antonelli Albon incident, which we didn't speak about, but Antonelli just forced him onto the grass and got a 5-second penalty. We didn't see the Ocon Stroll incident. We didn't really see... all these little things. It wasn't great, though. I'd go... For lap one brings it up a little bit. I'll go a 5.5.
Yeah, I think a 5.5 out of 10 is fair enough. We'll give it that. I wanna finish this episode, Jamie. I was reading an article this morning talking about the history of the fastest Grand Prix or fastest lap in Formula One history or highest average speed. I want to take you back. I just want to read an article here from Autosport or a segment of an article from Autosport. At Monza in 1971, Chris Amon got the lap record.
Chris Amon, but yeah.
Chris Amon. It's not AR, it's AM.
Yeah, but he's New Zealand, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a Kiwi, or he was a Kiwi.
He was.
He's dead. Got the lap record at Monza, but apparently the Tifosi weren't happy with Matra because he got a tow from Tim Schenken's Brabham. Having beaten Jackie Eakes' Ferrari to pole, the timekeepers initially refused to acknowledge Eamon's lap at all, and it was widely reported that nobody else holding a stopwatch had registered the same time for Eakes as the officials have recorded. In a troubled year for Ferrari, it was generally accepted that they had been, and I quote, cooking the books to encourage the Italian public on race day. Still, Eamon made a poor start, reaching for a tear-off, dislodged his entire visor, and trailed home 0.5 minute down. It was incidents such as this which Mario Andretti to observe that if Eamon had been an undertaker, people would have stopped dying.
Yeah.
Incredible read.
Chris Amon has the most laps led without ever winning a race.
Yeah, I know.
183. Wild. Great number.
Shocking number.
Yes. What was I going to say? Oh, do you remember the Top Gear episode where they were timing a lap and then I think it was the British Leyland one and then at the end of the lap, James is so far off that they just drop the stopwatch.
Yep.
It's basically that. So there you go.
Pretty much. The Ferrari, you're just there going, yeah, no, we definitely did that lap. I don't care what anybody else said. Yeah. And then Chris Amon goes quick right now. Bugger. I don't think the Italians would say bugger, but still. Have we got anything else to add, Jamie? I feel like that was a good little anecdote to end the show on.
Yeah, I think that was good. That's it.
We've got a break week this weekend. I'm going to Silverstone for European Le Mans. I'm looking forward to that.
Wow. Who's always travelling now?
I'm going to Silverstone for an afternoon. It's a bit different than going to Monza for 4 days.
Fair
or longer
enough.
Than, actually, also, longer than that, because it's why the podcast was late.
Next week's show, I'll be in Devon, so that'll be fun.
Oh, really? Wait, when are you going? When are you going?
Thursday evening.
Do you want to come here and record earlier?
Oh, I'll see how far away it is. Genuinely, that'd be quite fun.
Well, put it this way. If you're going down the M5, I am not that far off the M5, which you should be if you're going to Devon. It'll be M4, M5.
We will see. Maybe. That'll be amazing.
IRL, No One Wheel episode. Incredible. The second one ever. We'll get it on the books. We'll get it on the books. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure to leave a like. Get yourself subscribed. And yeah, Jamie and I will be back next week to preview the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Feels weird having a break week again.